I didn't go back for years. I got here. My name's Scott. I'm an addict. A God of Christ and God's few people. I'm clean this day. I'm always a little embarrassed when I'm with a lot of people that have been clean a long time. Because where I got clean is when I got clean in Upper East Tennessee. If you've ever been to the movies about hillbilly, they made it in my hometown. No, that is the that's where the term redneck originated. And there was just no humanity. And from 1974 to 1979, I would go to AA, and the same thing would happen to me that you've heard other people talk about. I mean, you can come, but shut up. Or you can't talk about that. And sometimes I would talk even when they told me to shut up. So sometimes they would ask me to leave. And after that it happened, I don't know before how many times it happened, but a number of times. I was in graduate school at the time, and I went home from that meeting, and I hadn't met Ed in 1970, Ed C, motorcycle racer. I knew about NA in California, and I also knew that there was some NA in Atlanta. But at that time, it was before, coming from Morristown to Atlanta, before the interstate system, there were people eating my bears. Trying to cross the road. But I called. And I never will forget the phone call because, hello, this is N.A. My name is Jimmy. I'm an addict. I cried then. I told you my sad tale was woe. And he laughed and he said, well, just going to have to start in it. I thought that something had happened to the telephone. But he said, yeah, he said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you a starter kit. He said, get a coffee bottle and go out and play some kids. And that's what I did. We had some real trouble with the sheriff of Sullivan County, Tennessee. And they would send people to our meetings. They would park cars in front of the door, all kinds of stuff. So it didn't. People got half of one. And we could not say that we were under no surveillance at any time because we weren't. That was just the way of it. Well, fortunately, I was able to move to Atlanta in 1980, and when I got to Atlanta, it was like going to heaven. Because Bo and Ed and a lot of people had done a lot of hard work sowing the seeds in our congregations in Georgia. And so they were meeting. And by this time, I can read, and this is just me, this is just the way I think about it and the way I talk to myself. By the time I got to Atlanta, I had been abstinent 6 years. I didn't know much about recovery. I knew about white knuckles. Sweating through nights, and I knew what it was like to want to use and to have to not use a minute at a time or 5 minutes at a time. I know about that. But as far as real recovery from the disease of addiction, I learned that in our God's economy. It's like a story. But being the know-it-all that I was not going to let anybody know that I really didn't know anything. Because after all, I hadn't used for 6 years. And I said, look, I wouldn't let me alone in my house the 6 years going. That's just where I was. But yeah, I got involved. I got involved in service. I did the thing. At that time, I was fortunate enough to get to know Greg Pierce. He later became my sponsor. I've got a handwritten first draft of the NA tree. And it's in Greg and Jimmy's hand. A little later on, we got something called TWID, temporary working guide to service. It was temporary forever. It seemed like an eternity. But I served. I did what people asked me to do. I served as group level, the area, the region. And then one of the things I did as part of service is in Atlanta there are two PBS champions. In late 1981, somebody from PBS contacted NA and said they wanted to do a TV show with NA members. And at that time, I was a director of a treatment program in Atlanta. So to make a long story short, what happened is that because I was working in the field, I could identify myself as a therapist with experience treating addiction. And not violate the tradition of breaking my anonymity. Okay? So we did these TV programs. 28 weeks. What started out as a one-week shot, we did for 28 weeks. And when that was going on, I felt like that I was not being true to fellowship. I can't explain that. It's because there'd be times when we'd be in the middle of the show, I would want to say something like an addict. You know, rather than sitting there and being cool, calm, and clinical. But we did that. And I served in various positions. I chaired the Georgia Regional Convention in 1987. And up until that time, now some new people might not understand this, but in Georgia, at least, up until that time, we had never been asked back to a hotel. They were doing this term. Now, but they didn't want back. Well, I need to correct that. The first two were going to Howard Johnson's. It was later torn down. Probably while we'd been there twice. But nobody asked us back. Now, so we did this convention, and we worked really hard. And up until that point, one of the best days of my life We were getting ready to clear out on Sunday, and the people at the hotel told us they were locked out of the bank. No. That was just an incredible thing. And I served. Finally got the guy in work service, and at that time I was working. I had a regional service commitment, and we got this guy in work service, and we decided that we were going to transition the region to this new service structure. We did that. And we had to go back. Look at that again. Because there were some things that, while it may have looked good in print, it did not transfer to the real world real well. And so we had to go back and had to revise some of the revisions. But that's the great thing about it. Hey, if you do it wrong once, you always get the chance once to stay clean to do it wrong. Our server structure is just like what? You know, sometimes we don't do things so well the first time, but we keep coming back and we get it right finally. And being a part of that, being in service, it for me it was a two-way street. It allowed me to get out of myself and really feel like I was getting something back on the one hand. And on the other hand, I had to work really hard on the notion that I actually knew what I was doing. You know, I had to constantly remind myself that my service commitment and the action I take is God's manifestation, not mine. Because I truly believe that we have a responsibility to carry the message to the addicts who still suffer. And one of the ways we do that is through our service structure. Our service structure is a God-given mechanism that allows us to reach addicts all over the world. So, I was involved. I stayed involved. And I am today, as a matter of fact. I used to be, 25 years ago, I used to look at my service positions as some sort of onward and upward. You know, the goal being to be the RD for the region, and then be chairman of the board. But yeah. Anyway. I soon got over that. My God was raised because I had people in the program who pointed out to me that that was easy. Greg Peterson being one of them, my dad, who said to me one time when I was telling him about how much I thought about this and thought about this and thought about that. And I was by the newcomer when he said this. He looked at me and said, Scott, you sure you've been clean long enough to think? And he was right. But I did that. I mean, right now, currently, I am the alternate GSR in my own group. And they had their group conscious meeting last night, and I wasn't there. And already this morning, I talked to one of my sponsors and said, you know, you're supposed to be at your conscious. But that's just, you know, I've grown as a result of being in service. I've learned something of compassion, acceptance, understanding, gratitude. Sense of being part of. You know, I think it's because I've gotten older. You know, my mom was 68. In the last 5 or 6 years, every time I touch a tender moment, I cry. You know? I mean, driving my wife crazy. We go to the football game, they play an ass point to my cry.
Fundraiser
to me, he says, give me a break. So I have some issues with that. That's just, you know, that's my stuff and I'll own it. But I spend an awful lot of getting through an awful lot of hard work. You know, on convention committees, and then, oh, and then in Georgia, we became a not-for-profit corporation for the convention. So now, our convention is a corporation. It's not a profit, it's, you know, etc. But it seems that it doesn't feel quite the same. And that may be just the batteries of an old man. But it just doesn't seem to feel quite the same. And of course, now the region, we meet in a central location. Georgia, by the way, is the largest state geographically east of the Mississippi River. If you don't think that's true, ask Sherman. So we decided that we would have the region need to make it, which is sort of simply located. But, well, we did need to make it. Hotel we were meeting in got sort of out of whack. We had to move, so we moved 25 miles up the road. But anyway, we meet in a central location, and the region is picking up, or the area is picking up the hotel bills and paying mileage for people to attend them. Once again, there's no problem with that. Folks don't have money. Because I truly, truly believe that there is absolutely nothing. No service position in Narcotics Anonymous that should not be open to every member, regardless. And the price somebody has a service is wrong. Now, once upon a time, when I first got involved in Georgia, we moved to the region of the regional meeting in Randall. I had just come to Georgia, and I had to go to the region, and I didn't know very much about Georgia. And this is something else I found out too. You might want to remember this because I don't think this has changed. People in NA cannot draw maps. They cannot draw maps. So I got this map to get to the regional RSP meeting. I got this map, so I got in my car. It was an old Honda, it was about 100,000 miles on it. It got better gas mileage than oil mileage. And I set off. I drove about 160 miles. And once I got there, I realized that I was 30 miles from my house. That's when I became a kid. Can I hear And one of the places we used to go, once upon a time, the state of Georgia had five areas, okay? Four of them were inside 285, which is the perimeter around Atlanta. The fifth one, Piedmont, was everything else. And so when you would have meetings, the RSC in Piedmont, God, I think it had been on the Florida border or on the South Carolina border. When you went to Piedmont, this is when we were camping out. A lot of folks would come when we camped out for the region. The make of the Piedmont area always had this big aluminum pot full of cheese grits. I can see this big pot with this giant spoon sticking in it, these cheese grits. And I came to believe that they moved that same pot of cheese grits from one anybody trying to tell you that grits go to grow on kudzu, that ain't true. You know, kudzu is a plant that's rapidly taken over the space for the weed. But in spite of all of the cheese grits, the sense of commitment and community and family that we had was incredible. It's indescribable. The older I get, the more convinced I am that we are so limited by our words and our ability to express what we really feel. But my experience with service and Narcotics Anonymous has been unbelievable. I've done some really dumb things, and nobody said, go, you're fired, don't ever come back. They said, sit down, shut up. And nobody's ever tried to throw me off. Someone's always been there to help me. If I were in a place, I used to do this more often than I like to admit. When I've taken on more than I can handle, you know. I don't know if anybody else in here has done this. When I first got involved, you know, if someone comes to me and says, you want to take an AA meeting to the moon, I'm like, sure, I'll go. But I think, you know, I've been able to say, I did it again. I need your help. I need your help. I've made this commitment and I can't get it done, and I need some help. And people have always been there to do that. I think the only time that I've ever got in trouble with that is when I'm not asking. For 5 minutes before. So, service is such a big part of my recovery. And the people that I serve with. At the long car rides. That was just incredible. The things we shared and how close we got to one another. All about service. I'm really grateful that I had an opportunity to be here and be a part of this. I'm very fortunate in that when Greg went on, he asked some of us to preserve his archives. And we did that, and I really wanted to bring him up here. But there were 13 tons right out. And they're all cataloged. There's over 9,000, it's almost 10,000 pieces, 9,800 pieces in Greg's archives. They've all been cataloged. They're all of the, we put the documents, the paper documents, in those little sleeves to protect them from man. And done a lot of work. And originally, when I found out about this, we had hoped that we were going to be able to pull that off. But the fact of the matter is, it's a long way. It's, like I say, there's, 10,000 pieces on it. And the vehicle that we traveled in is a 2003 Ford Expedition with 200,000 miles on it and a freight bridge. And it just was not possible. It's just not possible. But we do display those archives every chance we get. And if you're in Georgia in February, come down to Mount Hospital, because we'll have them there. That's when the Georgia Regional Convention is held.
appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you. People like Scott, people like Bo, people like Joseph, they had already done it. Oh, this isn't. So sorry. They'd already done it. So those of you out here, so how many of you came to an NA community where there were meetings, there was a service system? You know, the meetings took place every night, or not necessarily every night of the week, but the meetings took place. There was an area of service, it took place. There was a region, it took place. There was literature, you could buy it, or they would give it to you if you couldn't afford it. There was coffee at the meetings, right? Right? That's how I came in. And somebody had done it all. And so I'm the beneficiary of the NA history that people have been talking about here today. Many of you too, right?
That's right.
Right.
Thank you.
The people who did this. Thank you. Thank you for writing the books. Thank you for setting up the meetings. Thank you for putting the system together. You gave us all this, right?
I
don't know what I'm doing. I'm not part of the history, right? I'm part of the present. Those of us who came in at about the same time, those of who came in after me, we're part of the present. The history, you people, whatever, you did the best. Like, thank you. Okay, so here's my message. However, those of us who came in when I came in, those of us who came in after me, whatever we do, we have to make it possible for others. That's what we have to do. You all made it possible for us. We have to make it possible for others. That would be, like, how would we dare not make it possible for others? What would be wrong with that? So that's me. I might just be done now. So I was trying to think, like, as I was talking, I was trying to think, like, so where have I ever been that we had to set it up from the very beginning? And so I'm going to tell you a story of where I've been, that it had to be set up from the beginning because it wasn't there. And it felt not unlike Scott's story of the hills of Tennessee. About 4 years ago, I had this opportunity through my professional life to travel and spend several months at a time in China. So the first time I went to China, I told no one about Narcotics Anonymous. The people that I worked with didn't know about Narcotics Anonymous, and I'd never been to China before, and this was maybe 6-7 years ago. I told no one about Narcotics Anonymous because I had a really pretty clear sense that being a drug addict in China was dangerous, if you understand what I mean. I don't mean necessarily dangerous on the street. It's dangerous on the street in Philadelphia. I mean, it was dangerous because terrible things would happen to you if the government in China knew you were a drug addict. And I was there as a guest of the government of China. I didn't want them to know I was a drug addict. I was very intimidated the first time I went to China. And China's not as scary as I thought it was. And so the second time I went to China, I made contact with people who were in China who wanted to bring Narcotics Anonymous to China. And this is like really... do you know how blessed we are, right? How like every single one of us is a walking sort of seed miracle for the goodness of life, right? Each one of us, right, is just a blessed event. So I was in China. I made contact mostly with people who are called expatriates. Do you know what that is? So there are people in China who weren't born in China. They've moved to China to do whatever it is they do there, but they're really basically, you know, Europeans, well, not all of them, some of India, but they were not Chinese people. So that's the basic core of the recovering addicts in China. And for no reason that has anything to do with me, some of those people knew real Chinese recovering addicts. And because I no longer was afraid, we held the first Beijing Chinese meeting in my apartment. And yes, there was surveillance. I mean, that's just the way it is. I don't even know that to call it surveillance. You know, just what you do is reported on. But what we did was reported on, but no one stopped us. And not only didn't they stop us, they didn't stop us then, and they don't stop it now. So someday, NA is going to exist widely. Not just narrowly, it's small now, very small, big in Hong Kong, huge in Hong Kong. Someday it's going to exist all over China, the way it exists all over Iran, the way it exists all over here. Did I say that already? The way it exists all over Britain, the way it exists all over Australia, the way it exists because we care about each other. We love each other. And many, many, many times, we're the only people who can help each other. Mm. So I don't know anything about the deep history, and it's been a real privilege to come here today and hear the vital, living experience. I think Scott talked about it, that sense of coming together. So this is how it works for me. Y'all remember your first meeting, or maybe you were too, like, whatever, to remember your first meeting, but maybe your first week, or maybe you were too, whatever, to remember your first week, but your first month, right? Right? Do you remember that? I remember. As if it were yesterday. And to me, it was a long time ago, but as if it were yesterday. I remember when we would circle up at the end of meetings, and I would hold my sponsor's hand. Do you remember that? Did you do that? Do you do that? I would hold her hand for, like, every ounce of love and energy and care and goodness that was in it. And this is what I think. I think for us, those of us who weren't here in 1970 or weren't the first in their community to put NA together, I think it's that early time when we're here together and the people across the room from us or the people sitting in the room for us or the people coming into the meeting with us, those people are our community, right? They're who we depend on to save our lives. So I assume, but I wasn't here in the beginning, I assume that's what these people that talked to us about what it was like to be here in 1980 or what it was like to be here in 1970, that's what they're talking about. That absolute sense that you are the family that those other people may have tried to be for me, but that they couldn't function that way. I wouldn't let them in. You're it. You're my family. So that's what I think. I don't know. That's just what I think. So I think that each of us carries NA history to the next set of people who walk in the room. Right? That we hold out our hands. That we hold hands with those people the way my sponsor held my hand. I mean, she must have, like, I must have, like, you know what I mean, circulation, right? I must have stopped her blood from circulating. Just hold on to me. Make this possible for me. Make me feel safe enough here so I don't have to run away and I don't have to leave. So, I think that we're going to make history, right? Those of us who haven't made it already, we're going to make history for the next set of us who come in. And we're going to make it, even if we make it in meetings that have been there for 25 years, right? Or we're going to make, because the people have not been there for 25 years, right? Those newcomers who come, they have not been here for 25 years. They have not been here for 10 years. So our making history is going to be the same and completely different than their making history. Because we're not going to be, we can write the literature, but it's the next generation of literature. We can never, ever write the first generation of literature. It's been written. We received it. Our lives are built on it. We write the next generation of literature. We can't put together the first area. Somebody else did that. But we can put together an area for people, maybe I've always fantasized this, right? That we could put together an area for people who don't speak our language at all, any of our languages, right? Not our English, not our Hispanic, not our Italian, not our French, not our German. How about if we put it together for the people who say to each other, I'm just going to show every bit of Chinese I have. It's going to be four words and it will be over quickly. Nihoma, that I know is my attempt to say hello. Zajian, that's my attempt to say goodbye. She she, that's my attempt to say thank you. If you speak Chinese, you know how bad this is. And mayo, 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 which is my attempt to say no. Right? That's it. That's every word I have. It's a very hard language for me. It's every word I have, but we're gonna do it, right? We're gonna put together the system that supports people who have that language. So they can put together the literature in their language so they can read our message in their language and share our message in their culture. If we haven't done it already, that's what we're going to do. And we really are doing it. We're doing it in China. Where's CJ? CJ over there? I was in Nepal with CJ. We were
literally, right, on the top of the world. It's this really high country, really high up there, somewhere way high. Maybe it's ground zero, is maybe 5,000 feet. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is one of my favorite stories. It's nothing to do with Narcotics Anonymous. I'm in a country whose ground zero is 7,000 feet. That is, the lowest their country gets is 7,000 feet above sea level. And I'm talking to somebody, and they say, well, where do you live? And at that time, I lived in New Jersey at the beach, sea level. And the person said, well, what's your elevation? And I said, sea level. And the person said to me, mm-mm, that's not possible. You can't breathe at sea level. The air's too heavy. Okay, so we were way, way, way high up, and behind us, as we talked to people, literally were the Himalaya Mountains, right? That looks just like the Himalayas. No, it is the Himalayas. It doesn't look like it at all. It's really there. And their fellowship in Nepal is very young. It's, you know, maybe less than 10 years old altogether. And the people who inhabit it, who make it work, who put it together, who hold the meetings, who teach each other steps, who teach each other traditions, and who sponsor each other, those people are all under 30. Yes, yes. And they absolutely love one another. They totally, you know, you can feel it. They totally love one another. And they're totally and completely hungry for recovery. If you bring anything, like any experience whatsoever, they'll just sit, what did you do when you got to step four? What happened? I was walking, very dark there at night, very dark, and we were walking down this road from wherever the convention was to this hotel where we stayed. It was very dark, and we're walking with the use of, I'll tell you a funny story about this too, we're walking with the use of these cigarette lighters that have little tiny lights. You know what I'm talking about? You push like, you know, little tiny lights, but this is the flashlight that we have. So these cigarette lighters are these little tiny lights, these little flashlights. And we're walking with the use of these flashlights, and I'm literally holding on to somebody, and the person that I'm holding on to is this beautiful young guy, and he has, you know, a month clean. And he's never had more than a month clean. And he uses, and he gets a little time clean. You know, one of us. And he uses, and he gets a little time clean. And he uses, and he gets a little time clean. And I'm saying to him, try to stay as long as you can. We love you. We need you. You are our future. You are the future of NA in Nepal. And he said, please don't tell me you love me. Right? Right? Please don't tell me you love me. I'm not worth loving. Right? He's got about a year and a half clean now. You know it's worth loving. We're all worth loving. There isn't a place on earth where we aren't, and there's not a place on earth where we're not worth loving. We are worth loving. So the history of NA is the history of people knowing that we're worth loving, coming together, loving each other, seeing what was needed, producing what was needed. It's, 19 years ago. This is my life. It's 19 years ago. My husband and I used together. We have used together, and whatever
was good in our lives, whatever, we're wonderful people, remember, we're worth loving. We're wonderful people, we're talented people, we're skilled people, we're absolutely astounding people, actually, but we're using up all of our energy just getting and using drugs. Right? That's what had happened to us. That's what we brought ourselves to. That's what we were doing. And one of us, and honestly we're not clear enough in our minds to even know which one of us it is, one of us is in a public library one day looking for some distraction, right? I mean, my husband and I are intellectual, so, you know, maybe most of us don't look for distraction in public libraries, but we do. Right? So we're looking for something to distract us from the pain of coming down. And one of us is in this library, and for no reason, because it's never been there again, but for no reason, on the new releases shelf of the library is a basic text of Narcotics Anonymous. And one of us, we don't know which one, took it out of the library and brought it home and said, look what I found. So, you know, that we have people who I've actually never met till I was here in this room today. We have people who wrote that book, right? Like, here with us. And now it came into my life, and I read it. Like, you know, you might read a book. Like, can you imagine reading the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous? Like, you might read a book. I read it. Like, you might read a book. And at some point within the next year or so, that book sent me a message. This is me now. Sent me a message. And the message that book sent me is, you don't need to do this. You might want to do this. You might be, you know, you might have a compulsion to do it, but you don't need to do this. There's something going on in the world that actually says to you, you don't need to do this. There's freedom from this. You don't need to, you know, again. And like you, I met myself in that literature. You introduced me to myself. You told me who I was. You told me how I operated. Who was the person who was here who said, you told me who the dope was? Right. Right. It's all a trick. I never knew that. Right? I don't know. I never knew it was all a trick. I actually believed it, right? I believed the drugs. Right? Even when they stopped really working, I believed them. And the book told me it's all like a magic trick, yeah? It's all like you've been hypnotized into this, and you could be unhypnotized. So I told you that part of the story, right? The same way I introduced myself when I started, by saying, I owe my life to the people who put this all together. Mm. We owe, those of us who aren't the people who put it together, we owe our lives to the people who put it together. And since we really can't pay them back, we can only do what's called play it forward or pay it forward. I'm not even sure I got the words right. So my message, right, is please feel completely committed to doing for the next generation or the next two generations or the next three generations of recovering addicts that the people who have come here today did for us. Please feel completely committed to putting your absolute heart, mind, body, lay it down there, right? In any way, shape, or form it makes sense to you to lay it down there. because there are huge numbers of us who have yet to find recovery in Nepal, in China, in Ghana, in India, in Connecticut, in Vermont, in New Jersey, in Philadelphia, in New York City, and even in California. I hope I'm done, man. I'm done. Thank you.